Any of the board commissioners?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Recording in progress.
For which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now with me for a moment of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we're thankful again for this time we can meet here. We really appreciate the form of government that we have. It's not perfect, but we know it's probably the best system in the world. Help us all to understand it and not abuse it. And we pray that decision made here today would be in the best interest of Brown County. We also pray for those who have come down with COVID recently, that you might have your hand of healing on them. And also we continue to pray for the people in Ukraine as they're under the threat of the dirge of war. And we pray now that you bless this meeting according to your will. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Okay. I have one addition to the agenda. I'll put it down here. What says additions to the agenda?
Perfect.
Let's talk about the courthouse lawn. Okay. Any other changes? Additions?
Somebody said that Keith Baker wanted to be on the agenda. Is he? You got that? Okay, that's it.
Got it.
I got it. Wait a minute. Is that about the letting them come down and sell packages two different times?
Yeah.
You got that information?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay, that's all. Well, glad to help that, Blake. I talked about it earlier this morning.
Minutes and claims. Y'all have a chance to look at them?
Yes.
I have.
I didn't see anything.
I make a motion to approve the minutes and claims.
Second.
Motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. County Office Department reports, boards, and committees. First thing on the agenda is an ordinance personnel change. Change to our handbook. And Laura's going to come and she's going to read this to us.
Hello, gentlemen.
Okay.
And public. There is a proposed ordinance amending the County of Brown, Indiana Personnel Policies Handbook revisions with regards to sick leave as well as break in service. So I read it this time and then go from there. And Brown County Board of Commissioners, an ordinance amending the County of Brown, Indiana Personnel Policies Handbook revisions. Whereas the County of Brown, Indiana is an equal opportunity employer, and whereas it is in the intent of Brown County, Indiana to comply with applicable federal and state of Indiana employment laws and regulations. Whereas the County of Brown, Indiana provides Brown County employees with information about established terms and conditions of employment and employee benefits. And whereas it is necessary to amend county personnel policies from time to time. Now, therefore, be it ordained and established by the County of Brown, Indiana Board of Commissioners that the attached County of Brown, Indiana Personnel Policy Handbook amendments and new policy are hereby adopted and shall be in full force and effect on and after adoption and shall replace and supersede existing oral or written personnel policies and procedures. 2.23, break in service, page 20 in our personnel manual. Lapses in full-time or permanent part-time employment with the county that do not exceed one calendar year from date of termination shall count as years of service for the purposes of calculating eligible vacation, sick, and personal benefit time. A full-time or permanent part-time employee who is rehired by Brown County into a full-time or permanent part-time position within 1 year after leaving employment with the county shall be entitled to count years of service based on their previous date of hire with the county. Lapses in employment of more than one calendar year shall not count as service years of service. Employees rehired after a one calendar year lapse shall receive a new date of hire and calculations of eligible benefit time shall be based on the new hire date. 4.4, sick leave. That's based on page 39 in the personnel handbook. unused sick days shall be forfeited upon termination of employment with the county. However, an employee may voluntarily donate any and all unused accrued days to the sick leave bank. It used to say up to 5 days, but we have some people leave and they say, what can we do with my accrued? And so this is what we're recommending. 4.5, sick leave bank, that's also on page 39C, beginning in January 2017, and each January thereafter, full-time employees who wish to voluntarily continue enrollment in the sick leave bank must donate at least one of their unused sick days and may also voluntarily donate up to 5 additional unused sick days. All donated days lose their identity and become the property of the sick leave bank and cannot be reclaimed by the contributor. Upon separation of employment, an employee may voluntarily donate, and it previously said up to 5 days. What is recommended is any or all unused accrued sick leave days to the sick leave bank. So this is the first reading.
Okay. Mike Moga, are you on here for us today?
Yes, I'm here.
I have a question about a change of personnel policy. Does that require two readings or only one?
I believe it's only one, as far as I know. Let me double check that, but there is no fiscal attached to this.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead and continue, and then I'll interrupt and let you know if I saw something different. Okay?
So, basically what you're saying, the only thing that I see that if you left and you came back within a year, quote unquote, permanent, part-time, the only thing that you don't get back is a sick time.
That is what it is saying in this ordinance.
Okay, so you get everything else back. Except for your sick days.
You don't get the longevity. We're just talking about seniority, so it would be the personal, it does say vacation, sick, and personal benefit time. So, It does not put the stipulation that if somebody comes back within a year. That's a good point.
And the thing of it is, it seems to me like just the ones that I know in the past, this has already kind of had a precedent set where people have come back. I know, one of the deputies went up to Sweetwater and elsewhere, many of them, by the time they came back here, it was within a year and everything was recovered.
That is my
understanding. And there's other examples. So I don't know if that precedent is going to, should be considered.
Well, I think I entered into the conversation certainly. I've had some comments from people about this change and seem to be really concerned about the longevity being restored. And this amendment does not address anything about longevity.
That is correct. That is for the council to decide as the longevity. The commissioners decide the seniority, which is the sick time, personnel, and the vacation.
Okay. I don't know how many employees have been apprised of this change at this point in time. I would rather put this off to our next meeting and let all the employees have a chance to see what we're doing. I don't want to do anything that's considered to be behind their back or make changes that might affect somebody that doesn't know about it. I want to be as transparent as we can. So I don't think another 2 weeks is too much to ask. And I would like to convey this change to all county employees somewhere or another. At least make them aware that there is a change. They come in, look at it, they want it, whatever. So
okay.
I think we have an email where you get it says, all county employees.
Certainly.
Right. And I think, too, that gives us a chance to go back and research and see how many times that that's actually been an issue that was addressed and how it was addressed for that. So I'm a little more research. I sound like Commissioner Sanders now. Well, listen, I'm going to need a little bit more study on it and cogitate a little bit. And so, I'm going to fall into that category today.
Well,
glad you guys agree on this. Question from the back.
I have just one question.
Come to the microphone, please. You let me in the Zoom.
When you're talking, and I don't know if this is really kind of more asking you longevity, and then you're talking about them getting vacation and personal time back, are you talking from square one, or do they get back however many years they've been? I'm a little confused by that, because when you leave, you're usually paid out for that stuff. Am I correct?
And they work.
They are. I think that's the reason that we're holding off on the few weeks, so that we can make sure that we get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, right?
Okay. One other question.
But I know that people have left and come back within a year, and they had benefits restored. Now, I don't know, and I will find out, which benefits were restored, but if a precedent has been set, then that needs to be factored in.
Okay. Also, since when do we change personnel policy mid-year? Usually those take effect as of January 1st for any changes.
So the executive body can't make any changes?
That's what I'm questioning. I'm asking you. I've never seen it ever happen before where the personnel policy has been changed mid-year.
They never had the Speaker of the House booted out either, and that just happened yesterday.
Okay, well, that's not the subject I'm asking. I'm just asking you if you could check into that, because
I made no decision today, did
you? I know, but if you're investigating it, investigate that also. I'd appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Laura. We will continue to work on this in the next couple of weeks and bring it back for our second meeting in October. Okay, thank you very much. Indian Hill update. I got a big package in the mail today, certified mail from NDOT. I scanned it, I can speed read, but I really need to go back and actually read it, but I got the gist of it, I think. Scott, you know a lot more about this than I do. Could you help update us on that? And or Kevin, I don't know.
Sure.
Scott's got the information.
I think it's good news. NDOT has ruled, I think it was Friday they made their official ruling, and the mail probably just came today. But NDOT has ruled that the county was successful in its petition to reopen Indian Hill Crossing, which is, I know, to the neighborhood there, very good news, and a lot of our stakeholders who have partnered with us to make that possible, including the commissioners. There were some stipulations in there which we expected, and some that we, you know, would have been better in a different way, but I think we can make them work. One of those was, and I think this was something we offered, the grade approaching the railroad crossing will be, you know, need to be improved, and that's something I know we were thought would be, you know, maybe a good thing to do anyway. The one that's going to be a kind of an ongoing challenge, but I think we can work through it, is the requirement of crossbars and lights. And, you know, it to some that may seem like overkill. If you look at the crossings up track, down track, you know, with maybe some less safe conditions that don't have cross arms, but you know, what we've accomplished here is kind of a new precedent that's not been done, to my knowledge, in the state in any of our recent history. And so I think we can make that work. There is some discussion about, and I think we've got a meeting coming up maybe with to talk about the strategy of how we proceed. But there are the potential for some state funds that could go towards these safety enhancements at that crossing. You may have seen a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago a railroad federal grant that came to the state. There's a lot of focus on railroad safety. We also have some, what I think, very good partners and stakeholders in DNR. As you know, we've got what many consider the gem of the state in terms of a trail system, a statewide trail system that has been interrupted at that crossing. In addition, on the south side, on one side, you have a state nature preserve. On the other side, you have Yellowwood State Forest. All three of those things are really overseen and managed by DNR. And so I think they have an invested interest in seeing this crossing open in a safe way. I know Kevin is working on some things The trail folks have been absolutely essential, along with Farm Bureau, in making this happen. I think I would just leave it at that. We've got more work to do. This is, I mean, make no mistake about it, this is something that is quite a feat. Now, I will say the railroad has 2 weeks to appeal, and so does the county. We've been preparing for that appeal for weeks, anticipating the potential for an appeal. So we're ready to defend that if it does come. I don't know what possibly would be the case to appeal that on the railroad, but we're ready if it does happen. And beyond that, I think that emergency call is happening right now. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah.
The nationwide test.
Test to the
knife? Yes.
Yeah.
Good timing. That's it. That's so I think we're in great shape, and thank you for your support. I know this has been, it's probably been months long. I've kind of lost track of how much time it's been and how much effort. So thank you, commissioners, for taking this on, and we're almost there. We can find a way to make this work with the funding of the crossing, you know, safety improvements with the state's partnership.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are trying to do what we can, and commissioners. And we'll have to look at the money down the road to see where we can get it from. I think there are some options. So, yes, Randall, you want to say something?
Yeah.
Mike.
This is Scott. Can you pass something out for us? I want to do something. Highlighted something.
Yep, okay.
As far as money is concerned, I thought it should be. Read this as much as the next person, I guess. Can't hear you. This is the page you want to flip to, where it has three.
You got three, yeah.
I got two.
Okay.
I'm not sure if anybody's on the line. Where's the money going to come from?
Thank you, sir.
So, first off, you couldn't have gotten a more perfect and complete resolution of this if you wanted to.
Hey, go back to the mic so everybody can hear you there.
You couldn't have got a more perfect and complete resolution of this for your petition if you had designed yourselves. The finding section, NDOT says a comparison of the various differences between the railroad and the objections and other people's filings that work was made. And in addition, very importantly, a compelling reason was found to reopen the crossing. That's just as clear as it can be. The crossing will certainly be reopened. They did find that there were obstructions that they wanted to account for. But they also found, very fortunately, that they did not designate it as a pedestrian crossing, meaning to say that ADA requirements do not apply. However, on the next page, the things they're asking the petitioners to do is to make sure there are signs saying, hikers share the roadway. So the requirements, the very expensive requirements for being ADA compliant have been set aside, and we can proceed as the crossing was always used. You have no further, obligations that way. Now, as far as the seemingly onerous financial burden, which at first blush seems really tough, the petition that the next section is the apportionment part of the ruling. NDOT finds that the railroad has to pay for certain things in this upgrade, and then the petitioner has to pay for others. The section of code that I just gave you shows, however, that following apportionment, that part of the cost that is put on the petitioner is paid by NDOT per state statute. So it's not at all clear what you're liable for, except for roadway upgrades. And I don't want to second guess this or try. I can't see into that part. I'm just saying that the statutes are in your favor. So the last thing I want to say is about your posture going forward. Do you appeal or not? It's a very good agreement. So I'm not sure what there is to appeal, except for one thing. The crossbars, they seem like a bit much. Overkill. I was just down in Medora last weekend, and they have every variety of crossing, from no signals, no crossbars. The sign says that much, and then you're on your own. To crossbars. But in the middle, they have a reflectorized crossbox with a light also on the same post. I forget whether it's above or below the crossbar, right? That seems like a reasonable compromise. And it seems to me that contacting NDOT and arranging to appeal on that, to substitute something like that, which also has electronic signaling intrinsic to it, but which doesn't have the cost of a cap of crossbars, would seem pretty reasonable. And so an appeal on a limited basis would seem to be fairly friendly and well-intended. That's it. Any questions, I'll try to answer, but other people are going to be far more on top of these things than I am.
Okay. Thank you, Randall.
You're welcome.
Kevin, do you have anything to add? Maybe, I think you've been thought somewhat in this.
Well, other than to reaching out to Scott and...
Mike, please.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
His foot hurts.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. I'm Kevin Allen with Beam on the Snap, engineering firm in the state of Indiana. We have an entire department that's dedicated to railroad safety, crossings, and that sort of thing. And I've reached out to John Berry in that department, and he will be preparing, based on the It Is Ordered section, a task list that I'll get back to you hopefully by your next meeting that will outline what it would take, barring any appeal or any changes in negotiation with this, the step-by-step process, not only to do what PennDOT has outlined, but the environmental side, because you're in a floodway there. So sensitive, environmental sensitive areas, we'll approach, we're looking at this as a intersection improvement task. So there are things that you have to do beyond the simple opening the crossing, the regrading, you'd be doing work in the floodway, so it'd be pertinent and required, that sort of thing. So it'll be a complete top to bottom to do list to give you an idea of the work that's coming up. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, any other comments or questions about Indian Hill?
Just one thing.
Yeah.
If you're going,
sorry.
I need to exercise my hand tonight.
We can hear you, but it won't be on the recording.
There is a 15-day window in which to initiate that appeal, and I guess the idea would be to do it, to set that in motion, even if you don't, you know, as fast as possible, get yourself some flexibility and see what you can negotiate there without trying to refute everything. But I guess what I was going to say is that it's Brown County's to lose, so play to win.
Okay. Wayne Parsons.
Yeah, Wayne Parsons, Brown County resident. I have a question,
yes.
Maybe twofold. Has anybody considered it's called a bridge down on the creek? And what upgrades are we planning to do to that? If that road, I assume the road will be opened from 45 down to around the 45 again. What plans does the county have, or what obligations does the county have to fix this bridge that you can't hardly get a pickup across it now? I know the concern was fire trucks and ambulances and things for the neighborhood, that they needed that. I'm in agreement with that, but I'm neutral on the trail. But I'm just looking at the county side of that. Is anybody, maybe Mike, has anybody got a ballpark estimate on, if we go forward with this, which seems to be the way everybody wants to go, and you know, where's that money going to come from? I guess that was my questions. Thank you for your time.
All right. Okay. Kevin.
Again, Kevin Allen, I'd like to just make one comment to address this gentleman's concerns. This has been brought up numerous times, and the best advice I can say right now is you are looking at a much more costly project, $2 million to get a bridge crossing through that floodway. If you can get the crossing open without touching that, and I believe NDOT simply says you need to put a 4,000-pound limit or whatever, might you've got a bridge rating on that from your bridge inspection report, whatever complies with the inspection rating. Don't open that Pandora's box quite yet.
Yeah, it's technically not in the bridge, but because the actual...
It's a culvert.
The actual opening, that's less than 20 feet.
But you do have a low rating on the permit.
I had him check it, so I've been working on the rating.
Hey, just appreciate his concern, and it's one of mine also. Don't open that box quite yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah, if I could make a comment.
Sure, go ahead, Mike.
Jerry, I've given a quick look at the report too, and I think the key thing there, which is probably the big hole, a couple things that Kevin mentioned on construction and floodway, having to get permits and whatever, and they thrown in one time frame of wanting signal work started within 12 months. Well, we have to go through a full design, which they also said that all designs had to be approved by NDOT, which could cause some huge delays, and if we get into permitting, that's going to take, that could be an unknown factor there as far as delays, so we probably have to have a time extension. But there are some concerns there. One of the other quick things I looked at, which we had never really discussed in the past, is actually off Kevin's drawing, you know, to flatten that grade out, you're putting in 5 to 6 foot of fill pretty much on the ends.
Correct.
So if you look at spilling out those side slopes on the northeast corner without building a retaining wall, that total slope would go halfway out into Bean Blossom Creek, and DNR is not going to allow that, so there'd probably have to be a major retaining wall there as part of the design if that happens. So it's several things to consider through the. Really, what needs to happen is probably do a preliminary scoping and define what all those design features are and what standards have to be met. But, you know, there's a big one there when they say that we have to meet NDOT's review and it has to meet the design manual. That's some pretty strict rules to follow.
There are a number of considerations about the whole situation. I think we just have to take it one step at a time and see how far we get. We ran into a roadblock, if it's a money roadblock. I got a letter from an outfit that I haven't heard of from before, but they're suggesting that there's all kinds of federal money flowing down that Brown County could have. What, money for water infrastructure, surface transportation to improve the business corridor, construct a multimodal greenway and pedestrian path, roadway improvements, and to create bicycle and pedestrian paths, waste and wastewater infrastructure upgrades, water wastewater infrastructure to generate economic development, money for the construction of an overpass to enhance workforce training and drive economic development, the development of an industrial park, to retain school resource officer positions for intersection safety improvements, construction of a road connector to improve safety, to purchase radio equipment for first responders, street reconstruction and beautification, make street safety improvements and replace a section of a sewer system, to construct an ADA accessible pedestrian walkway, actually money to construct a road and to plan a surface transportation project. I don't know, some of those I think are worth looking into. I don't know, kind of strings are attached to it, but you know, there's a lot of money in Washington, D.C., and they just appropriated that.
That wasn't sent out by Publishers Clearinghouse, was it?
No.
I think I won, too.
I'm private firm that does this kind of work, help you get grants, kind of thing.
We're grant writers.
We'll look at it.
Jared, I believe Mr. Clark has something.
Oh, yes, yes, go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, Jerry.
Tim Clark. Hey, just a question on the Indian Hill. How fast can we just open up the crossing to pedestrian traffic for people to access that trail? Because right now there's a workaround, right? People have to walk up and down 45 as that walk around for Tecumseh Trail. What's stopping us, well, that 15-day thing, what's stopping us just opening up that, that trail for the hikers, for the pedestrians? Yeah, Mike.
I can answer part of that. If you look at NDOT's document, one of the statements in there is it specifically says the crossing is to be closed until the new design is approved. So they're saying it cannot be opened back up otherwise, is my interpretation, if I can find it here.
And then maybe that can be negotiated, but what's the risk to somebody walking across the, you know, the crossing when it's closed? I mean, it's absolutely not.
Well, you can do it anywhere along the line if you want to, but as far as the county taking any official action.
But again, all I'm saying, that may something might be able to work out, because right now there's that kind of a dangerous workaround right now.
It's actually the number one sentence on it is ordered. The petition is approved with following conditions, and the very first one is, until all these conditions are met, the crossing shall remain closed.
That's part of the negotiation, though. Mm-hmm. So, thanks.
All right. Well, thank you all for your input on this subject. We'll proceed with Scott. Do you think we should do the appeal, the 15 days within that? Is there a reason for that?
You know, I think we should talk tomorrow with our team and see what we come up with. But like I said, we've been preparing for weeks to defend any appeal by the railroad, so we're ready for that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you all. And moving right along, I want to talk about the Nalbone Regional Sewer District a little bit. That was created in about 23 years ago. It was originally envisioned that there'd be 130 customers hooked on. That didn't happen initially. There were about 60 hooked on. And so it's been kind of a barely making its way. However, a few years ago, Forest Fields apartment complex was built out there. They hooked on, which is 72 units. But it all comes in one pit. They pay the bill for all of it. But the people that own it are paying the $60 per month per unit of all 72 units. The only problem they have out there is too many people flush diapers down the toilet. And Dave Essence had fetched those out on numerous occasions. Probably put some kind of trap in there. But anyway, Dave Essence was appointed by the commissioners, seven, 8 years ago. Well, you know, it couldn't be over seven, but I voted for him. I was a commissioner probably 7 years ago. Wonderful guy. He's taken on the responsibility for maintaining the thing. Bynum Vanio out of Bloomington has a certified operator. Every plant like that has to have a certified operator. And they have a fellow that does that for them. They also come and pump out the sludge, but they do not have a contract with them for general maintenance. And they've been doing that himself. According to state law, he can pay himself $50 a day out of the sewer district. If they hire Bynum Vanio, it's $150 an hour by the time they leave Bloomington until they get back. And so Davis said, we can't afford that. Well, I don't know. I don't know all the finances, but I know they are in order. I met the bookkeeper the other night. But Davis, getting way up in years, he's ahead of me even. He's about to approach overtime. I'm in the fourth quarter. But Dave's getting tired after all these years of doing all the work. He came on the board because he wanted to keep grades down. And done a pretty good job of it so far. But like everything else, I mean, the cost of everything has gone up. Electricity is, I don't know, 2 or 3 times what it was 10, 15 years ago. I mean, everything you want to talk about is more expensive. So I think a rate increase is in the works somewhere, sometime before too long. The people from Brown County Regional Sewer District, Clint Studebaker and Mike Leggins, and I met with them Monday night, and they are showing some interest in taking it over. Now, I've already checked with legal, and one district can take over another district, add it to the system, make one out of it. Of course, there's some legalities that have to be worked out, paperwork. Or the district could be sold to a private entrepreneur, which is your fine one. It doesn't have to remain public, so to speak. Well, anyway, we're looking at some different options because pretty soon we're not going to have any board members. Now, as it stands right now, a board member has to either live in a district or be a ratepayer in the district. And there are 300 people that qualify. And Dave has contacted every one of them to try to get them to come on board. But no luck. He had one fellow who showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning, worked with Dave until 11 o'clock, got in his truck, drove away, said, I don't want nothing to do with it. So finding board members, is because it's a working board, is probably just not going to work. I think they're going to have to figure out how they can bring somebody in, a firm, and get a contract with them to do the maintenance, which is going to cost money, of course. So anyway, I just wanted you all to know these things are in the works. Don't anticipate the system going down anytime soon. It has a few problems. About figured them all out. We have a leak. It's a vacuum system, and it's been very hard to find the leak because it doesn't make much noise, and you don't see anything. It's sucking it all in, going to the plant. That's why they have to haul out so much sludge, I think. But anyway, if they all resign and can't get anybody to be on the board, then it becomes a little bit fuzzy, I think. Mike Moe's helped me out a lot on this. It may come down to the commissioners have to go back and appoint somebody to find it. They did change from a commissioner appointment for the board to an elected board 2.5 years ago, but they've never held an election. I don't think they know how to. I wouldn't know how to. I could get the clerk involved, I'm sure. I don't know what that costs. But they're thinking about going back to a commissioner appointment anyway. So we'll see what becomes of all of that. But I just wanted you all to know the truth about the situation before you hear any rumors. It's not going down. It's not going away. Nobody's stuff's going back up in their house.
And just in relation to that, too, Mr. President, I was wondering if maybe Kevin Allen had any information on the bean blossom or whatever they call that now. Is it anything new on that front for that sewer district potential project?
Well, at our last joint meeting, and I don't mean to speak for Helmsburg, but they signed an agreement to get funding to start the design on the new treatment plant at Helmsburg. For anyone who don't know, this would be the plant that would be large enough to handle the Brown County collection system, which would eventually extend from Lake Lemon to Woodland Lake. That's the design. That's the phase one project as it sits now. That plant's a modular design, which you would be able to cost effectively expand in the future as additional segments of the collection system come on. So you're balancing your costs as they both ratchet up. They'll both ratchet up in capacity and costs and customers concurrently. we are in the process, I would say we, Brown County RSD is in the process of about a month behind Helmsburg in taking some funding steps that way also, but that's, I can't give you anything firm on that.
Okay.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir.
It's my understanding from when we were down at the meeting, was it July 8th or when was that, when we met at the 4-H Fairgrounds?
Yes, that was our public, yes.
Okay. It was my understanding that the system they was probably leaning toward was an open pit system for down there, which meant that it's got like a big pit, an arm that goes around, and it would be aerated. Sunlight, and chemically treated.
This is, you're referring to the treatment plant itself?
The new one that they would be building, if my understanding is correct, it would be an open pit, aerated, sunlight, chemically treated system. Now, it sounded like that was what they was leaning toward. Am I correct?
Yes. Now I can't speak for the other engineering firm, Lockmuller, that's doing that design.
Okay.
However, they evaluated three different types of plants. What we call an algae wheel, which is kind of what you're describing. You've got a greenhouse over it. The algae grows, digests the waste, that sort of thing. What's called a sequencing batch reactor, which has multiple cells that digest, float, clarify, and discharge the waste. And the one that's selected is an aeromod, which relies heavily on oxygenating the waste pool. And both the sequencing batch reactor and the aeromod are open top bays, if you will, systems.
No roof.
I do not believe there's a roof over them. However, the operation is based on pumped air, not sunlight. So push come to shove, depending on where you're at, a roof over them would not, in my limited knowledge, affect the operation of them. If it's something to keep excessive rain out of them, because you know, rain's a few inches. Guess what? You got a 5,000 square foot tub there. You're going to collect 2 inches of water on top of that and have to flow through your plant. So.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Hope I answered your question.
Okay. Very good. So that's about all we have on Gnawbone and the update on the sewer system here in Brown County. We have next
highway.
Mike Magner.
Give you a couple handouts for us, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir. Okay, just for reference, if you look at the little spreadsheet, since we're in the middle of budget cycle, I had Lisa go through and do a summary because we always run all of our fuel reports have to be run the first of each month. So we went through and just updated year to date what each department has used so far on fuel out of the pumps. And then there are three different departments, well, two are actually town. If you look down about halfway, the town of Nashville, Nashville Police, and then if you skip a line, there's solid waste. They reimburse us for the fuels that they use because they're separate budgets. And then the highway department pays for all of our fuel out of our budget. So minus those four lines, everything else that's on the table is what comes out of your fuel line item. So you can go through, I didn't have her separate that, but I should have had her total up how much that is. But you know, I think in this year's budget, we had $175,000 set aside for fuel. And, you know, with the spikes going up and down and fuel cost, and, you know, it's still high, but it's down from what the peak was. So hopefully we're still within the range to make it all work out before the end of the year. But that just gives you kind of an up-to-date on where we're at as far as fuel usage. And then the second handout I gave you was a document that I just got by email on Monday, which is, we get these LPA newsletters, sometimes monthly, sometimes quarterly, but there were a couple of big items that hit in this one. And one of them there that I highlighted at the bottom of the first page is, now this, take, keep this in mind, this came from NDOT. So it's good news, NDOT's created a new public agency guideline book. So their new summary guidelines, which I have printed out a copy of, which is 22 pages, is a summary of how to fill out the application for grants, which goes along with the 42-page PowerPoint presentation on how to fill out your application. So they've simplified the process. And I'll just leave it at that.
But you're good at that.
So far, thank you. Later on in here, actually on page 3, they say that, you know, because we have an application pending, which was round 2 for 2023, and they're still just saying that the awards will be announced sometime this fall.
So we're still waiting on the million?
So we're still waiting to see if we get the 6th million so far.
Okay.
And then applications for the first round of 2024 was in a separate document. They've actually set the dates already. So for round 1 of 2024, the application window is typically a 30-day window. So it will open on January the 2nd and close on January the 31st for the first round of 2024 for funding. And we would be eligible for that, assuming all of our asset plans and everything else are in line. So if you skip over to page 2 of the handout there, the Title VI and the ADA requirements, they're starting to put more teeth into the fact that if we don't keep these documents up to date, they could blackball us from getting any more grants. So,
and documents being one more time?
We actually have documents, but they need to be updated and submitted. Before, we just had to have them on file. Now, under the Title VI, I believe it's the Title VI one, yes, they actually want it submitted once every year, and the ADA plan once every 3 years. So before, we did not have to directly submit them to anyone for any reason. We just had to have them on file in our county office. So that'll be a little bit of additional work there. And then one other, to go along with Commissioner Pittman's letter there about some funding opportunities, they are going to open up, this will be for some new federal highway money that came down to NDOT, which they have to help share with the counties and cities and towns. So they are going to do, this applies more to counties than the cities because it's for rural projects. So they are opening up a, what they call a NOFA, Notice of Funding Availability, for local projects, which the application period will be from October the 30th through December the 1st. So we probably need to sit down and have a little planning session to see if we want to do any submittals. Sometimes that can get pretty involved, and we need to find out for sure that those funds actually are. The last time they did one for bridge preservation, they had everybody submit all the paperwork, which some of them spent hours and hours and days, and then once they were submitted, they just said, oh, well, we're not going to fund any of them, so, you know, just wasted everybody's time. So those are projects that are still out there on the table. Other than that, in October is our normal month to do our routine bridge inspection field work, so that will happen during the month of October. And also in October, I typically submit the update to the asset management plan, which is another requirement for funding. So I will get those updated and submitted. And then it's hard to believe, but it's this time of year already, is we need to be looking at, usually we do it in the first meeting in November, is put out a request for annual bids for supplies for 2024. Because we usually advertise in November, open them up in the first meeting in December. And if there's any questions, we got a couple of weeks to make a decision before, if we change vendors before the start of the year. So that's something that will be on our docket to get done. And then, other than that, we put all that stuff aside, then we get back to just our normal job of maintenance. So hopefully we'll get a little bit of rain tomorrow, which will help with some of the gravel roads. They're just, right now, he's really just polishing the surface. We can't really cut them. They're too dry. You try to cut them, it just turns to powder about 3 or 4 inches deep. So we're doing minimal grading, but they're still doing a lot of ditching, a lot of new culverts, and still got the bush hog out mowing. Just part of our normal maintenance routine. So, as far as I know, unless you have any questions.
I got a few.
Okay.
First of all, thank you for providing the list, the value. That seemed to be the last part of that puzzle.
You're welcome.
Any update on the new trucks?
There's a possibility within the next week. We're still looking at getting a date set to where they can come down and go through them with us. So I'd say hopefully within next week, we got the two Kenworths that we've had ordered for a couple of years. So they're getting very close.
Just one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
The road between Oak Ridge and Lick Creek by the graveyard, the little short chute that used to be like went over to Dunaway Road.
Right.
I noticed y'all been down there working on the bridge and doing side ditching, and is anything going to happen on the hill, or are you guys getting it ready this for winter for drainage?
We're basically just doing ditch work. So if there's a spot there where over the years that's been dug out several times, there's a spring or something under there when we do have groundwater. Right now there's not a lot of groundwater coming out, but there's kind of been a continual soft spot that is on our future paving list. I think it's still 2 or 3 years out. But that would definitely need to be dug out and patched before we pave it.
Is it already also worked over on Dunaway Road, done about the same thing, opened it up for ditching?
Yes.
Drainage this winter?
Yeah, Mark's been up in that area about the last 3 weeks, up in that general area.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, I asked you something about Annandale Drive. Is there any thing we could do about any of the potholes when you first enter there?
We patched them.
You did?
Yes.
A big hole, sir?
Yep.
That's all I have.
The only question I have is, not my question really, but several constituents have called. Just wanted to know what we're going to do with the local money for paving this year. We figured out what we're going to do or not.
That's in the works, so it's a balance between what funds we can transfer. What I had on the list, I believe, was about 8 miles, and we're not going to be able to do all of them, so we'll pick the priorities, and I'll probably fire you an email about a week or so, and we'll go from there. And then the ones that we are going to do, I have talked to two of the three of our main bidders, contractors, and they said, yeah, don't count us out. We'll typically have some open windows. You know, may not, if we had 2 or 3 roads, they may just come in and do one and have to leave and come back.
Yeah.
You know, they wouldn't come in and be able to knock the whole job out, but they still said they had some openings yet this year to get some smaller projects done.
Okay.
In between their big federal jobs.
I do have one more thing. I've seen something about the bridge down Evansville Road. If your guys get back down that way, would you check and see if the nails would pop back up? What I used to countersink them was a truck tire bead breaker. You know, that's just something I come up with. I don't know if that was efficient, if that worked. But I know you guys probably have one, then.
Yes, we do.
Because if you just hit the nails, it's going to go flush on top. But I had some success with countersinking them. I thought that if they're popping back up, maybe not.
Okay. I've not heard any complaints directly of any coming back up. We were down there about a week ago. So I'll have to check it every week or 10 days just to make sure.
Yeah, try and keep up with it. And is there anything else we can do with that?
Best thing that can happen to us, we get about 2 or 3 inches of rain and
boards swell up.
Boards swell up, because that's when they start to work loose, is when the boards dry out.
Yeah. I don't think that's in the near future.
If not, we may have to pump some water on it. We've done that in the past. Actually, I've done that on several projects, a couple of older covered bridges. We had that problem. We had one that had a laminated 2x4 on the edge deck that got real loose. So we had the fire department come out and just spend a couple of hours soaking it down. Next morning, they were swelled up and quiet as could be.
There's a fire department real close to that.
So it's, you know, it may sound funny, but it works, you know.
What about the covered bridge up at Bean Blossom? Have you done any work there?
Not lately. It's we did a major rehab. I actually put some new beams under the approach span.
Really?
Probably about 4 years ago. Yeah, because we had some beams that were rotted.
The tourists will be coming.
Yeah, I actually happened to drive through there end of last week, and there was a car sitting right in the middle of the bridge, and mysteriously, all of a sudden, their hands went behind their back when I pulled up. They hopped in their car and drove off. And you got all the spray painting on the inside of the bridge.
Oh, yeah. So, I noticed there was a guardrail down up there. The fact that all the tourists are coming down, you come down that hill, I think the guardrail was, if you're coming down the hill, was to the right before you went into the bridge. And I know you can't do nothing with that road. It's probably like the rest of the gravel roads, all washboarded out, and you can't do nothing with them until you get some moisture. If you can get that safety beam on there, I don't want nobody to fall off the hill.
Yeah, we'll have to check it tomorrow.
Just little things.
I think it's raining.
Details, little details.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Next on the agenda, we have a request, actually, for
selling patches
at the southeast corner of the courthouse lawn for a kiosk to sell military-related patches and emblems. It's a 50-50 effort to benefit the Atterbury USO and the Brown County veterans. And they would like to do this on Sunday, October the 15th from 10 to 3, and on Sunday, October the 22nd from 10 to 3. They have to have permission from us to do it.
Is this the first time they've done it, or has it been done before? It's
the first time I know of this particular arrangement, yeah. It's actually by the Veterans Coalition and something else. They have about 3 or 4 veterans organizations in the county, but the coalition represents all of them. So I don't know that we've ever done this particular thing, but we have allowed things to
this can
benefit of charity on the lawn. We don't let anybody come in there and set up to make money.
I think the fire department made some money and fish.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but going for a good cause.
Well, this would be a good cause.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with it as long as they don't drive no stakes in the bricks or they got some way to counterweight the tent if they're going to leave it. Are they just going to be there one day and take it with them and then bring it back?
I
know those little pop-up tents, if they're not secure, but I don't want them driving no stakes in the brick.
Plus, we're going to have to address that at some point anyway, to put the brick down there, and that redone. And
I've seen all that. I make a motion, as long as it's secure, without driving stakes in it, that we'll go ahead and let them do it.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. Motion and second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that will make them happy, I do believe. And that's about all we have. Except, I said except.
We've got a very important person here we've got to take care of here. Courthouse, you want to do something with Mr. Parson? Courthouse lawn.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to dig something to put a bell up from the courthouse.
You probably already know this, but we've been working on a volunteer project to take the courthouse bell that they found when they went up to repair it. Nobody knew it was up there. They took it down. It's in storage right now. And we've had a number of volunteers that want to come together and build an enclosure for it, put a rope on it coming out to the side so people could ring it, and a little box for donations for charitable cause. And Mr. Parsons back here is with us today. He's an expert welder and does all the metal work you can imagine. Don Waltman is carpenter. He's going to donate the lumber and the labor for that part of it. Dwayne also has the tempered glass that we'll enclose it with. So it's all donated. I've contacted Shelby Materials. They're going to donate the concrete for the pad we were going to pour. Justin Mollo has volunteered to pour and finish the concrete. Mike, the first thing that has to happen, though, is Mike. And we went down there and showed him the site, and he marked it out and called Holy Moly. Well, 811.
This thing is Holy Moly.
So as soon as they get it marked, which might probably be this week sometime, then when Mike has some spare time with his men, he's going to bring the excavator up and scratch off the sod there and get it ready for the concrete. I've been involved with this for over 2 years, and it's always one of those things that didn't turn out to be a high priority. But it's going to happen this fall, or I will resign.
Where are they putting that, Mr. President?
Yeah, we talked about a number of locations. Originally, we talked about putting it up north of the Gold Log Jail. I don't think anybody would see it there too much. Then we thought about putting it at the south end of the bricks where the fire department used to set up their tent. Mm-hmm. There's an 8x8 piece of dirt there with grass on it. But then somebody said, well, the highest visibility would be if we put it on the other side along Van Buren Street.
True.
So Mike and I went down there and we figured out there's a relatively level spot. It will attach right to the existing concrete, and it'll just be an 8-foot square of concrete, and then this relatively small structure to house it. And we've got to clean the bell up a little bit. It's still got some bird droppings on it, about it when we figure that out. So it's going to happen.
Just a couple thoughts.
Yes.
I'm not throwing no monkey wrench or trying to, and putting the bell up. The only thing I ask is that you work with the judge and the bailiff or something in that where you get their view, not mine, you get their view on if somebody's just out there continuously ringing that bell, if that's going to be an issue. So I think putting the bell out there, displaying it, putting a donation box out there is great. I like all that. But having continuous access to ringing that bell could be an issue. But I would suggest you confer with the judge and the bailiff, and if who's going to collect the money, I would think that the bailiff would be qualified to collect the money and give it, pass it over to whoever you want to pass it over to see who it goes to. That's all I have on that. I don't have a problem putting the bell up. It's just the continuous ringing during a trial might be a problem.
Well, you know, he makes a good point, as Commissioner Sanders always does. But, you know, what you might look at, too, is potentially ring it, like, you know,
noon?
On the hour or once a day or twice, you know what I'm saying, instead of... Because I feel like if you just let the kids get out there and start ringing, it may be a constant thing.
Yeah.
So maybe you could put it on some kind of a schedule, and that way, you know, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
That's why we have three commissioners. I didn't think about that. You're exactly right. And the things I don't think about, he does. Or he does.
Do you have some ideals on that, Mr. Parson, please? You and likeness.
We could possibly make it.
He's looking at the clock, how much time do you have?
Are we making any sense at all to you, sir?
On what?
Whether we're going to have continuous ringing.
Yeah, I'm along with Ron. It's going to be so simple. We're just making a bezel, so to speak, that the rope will come through. If we don't like it, we'll push the rope back through the bezel. We can test it, have the judge sit up there, and if it's an annoyance, we just won't do that. I think that ringing of the bell would be... I thought maybe generate the revenue for Christmas fund for the kids or some worthy cause. And we don't have to ring it, but it's going to be, it's not going to upset the budget. But if it can help for the kids or something, that's fine. And if it interferes, I see no reason to ring it.
But we're having a donation box still.
You could always have a contest.
We are.
It's over there at the school.
There you go.
Is that a question or a statement?
The donation box, I guess, you know, you've been a fabricator. You've got that figured out. Possibly where that somebody can't see through a glass to where they donate it, it's going to go down in a pocket or something, and somebody's going to have a key that, like the bailiff, will go down there and get it and then turn it over to the parties that you want to fund. And you check with the judge and them to
make it all manageable. Yeah, I think we just find an obsolete bank and we'll get the suction tube and it'll slurp it right up.
Wow! That's why you're the fabricator.
Thank you.
I didn't think of that.
I think everything can be solved.
I think it's all pretty...
It just takes time.
Well, here's a thought. I mean, there may be days when we're having a jury trial.
Correct.
We don't want that room. So if we had a way where we could secure it...
Certainly.
So it's not accessible, and then other times it could be accessible. Because I'm sure they're having a jury trial where they don't want that bell right now.
We'll have to find out, because the bell's going to be inside a glass enclosure. If it's an issue, I think we can address it.
I talked to the judge, and she's fine, great with the idea, but I don't think she's thought about that either, but I didn't think about limiting it, you know, the ring.
I really hadn't either, because I don't try to overthink ringing bells. Thank you.
That's where I come in. I'm typically an overthinker.
You're a bell ringer.
It's between a gift and a curse.
This is not going to cost the taxpayer anything.
That's good. That's a good thing.
Okay. You got something else there, Ron?
That's the last thing I've seen other than other business and legal and Mike Mogul.
Yeah.
Moga, you there?
No, not yet.
Sorry, sir.
These are things that probably don't require a vote by us, but I want the public to know what we're doing. We have Todd Baker, who does our landscaping. We got two trees out here that are actually invasive species that are terrible. They're growing all over the wall and out in the parking lot and everything else. He wants to take those out and clean that up on the north side of the building here. And this line between us and the library parking lot is all grown up with some more invasive stuff. So he's a landscaper, but he doesn't have a chainsaw. He's not doing tree work. But he got a proposal from an outfit to do that. And of course, the big thing with trees is liability, because it's really easy to get hurt, somebody, you know. So he got a quote from Bluestone Tree, and the tree removal and clean everything up would be $1,750, and then to grind the stump and leave the chips would be $630. That would get rid of all that stuff.
23 plus 2,300.
Yeah. So that's something.
Do we have that money, Auditor?
I will check on that.
We have a grounds maintenance fund if there's any money in it.
I know we do.
There probably is.
And it's, you know, and I've noticed that too, when you park out there, the trees are taken there. I mean,
this had come up months and months ago.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it had come up months and months ago. Just we never took any action on it.
I mean, that seems reasonable. I got a chainsaw, and I wouldn't do it for that.
Yeah.
And I don't have any liability insurance.
That's amazing.
Okay, so we'll proceed with that. The next thing is the jail. We have problems over there with concrete and foundation. And Chris and Todd, actually Chris, got an estimate to repair it. This is, I don't understand a lot of it, slab jack, 212 square feet, the sidewalk, approach around the stairwell and the side door,
Flapjack 16 square feet in another place, 190 square feet somewhere else, and also crack fill 4 feet of crack running diagonal to the side door, and Flapjack 8 square foot of the corner, or the block. Anyway, that concrete is suffering over there. It's just from, I think part of it is too much salt, but also, you know, the ground shifts every time it freezes. So he believes we ought to do this before it gets worse. And that estimate is $5,880.
$5,000?
Yeah.
I can't believe they can do it for that.
That's pretty serious work.
I mean, it sounds...
Are they shooting falling in? Is that what they're going to do?
You know, I don't know what Flapjack means. Do you know?
Pump grout. Typically, they pump grout. Drill little holes and pump grout under it to float it back up.
Okay.
And then it fills the void where the ground settled.
If they can do that for $5,000, that's a deal.
Yeah, that's a good price.
So too.
And the only thing else, I don't know if we've had this conversation or not. No, it was with the engineer the other day. There's different things you can put on the concrete. Salt is probably absolutely the worst.
Mm-hmm.
There is stuff that you can use that has the same effect somewhat. And we probably should find something different to use, or it's going to continue to deteriorate.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they've been using on the sidewalks. They usually give bagged material for that. Over the last couple of years on the parking lots, they've actually been filling up their old spreaders down in our lot with the sand mix. But they've been doing the sidewalk separate.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if they're using an ice melt or a salt. But that's something something to have them look at.
Good. All right. Our maintenance guys would like to have this little snow plow to go in front of, Bobcat or near a...
Looks like a lawnmower, right?
Whatever, lawnmower. The sidewalks. They have to hand shovel all the sidewalks to get snow. And that's quite a bit of time and work. They'd like to have this small plow put in front of some piece of equipment just for the sidewalks. It's only as wide as 4 foot wide, so it's a standard sidewalk. And that would cost us looks like $793. That's not very bad. You okay with that?
I was wondering why anybody would want to get on that when they got a perfectly good four-wheel drive truck with a heater in it. But the sidewalk is what made the most sense.
Yeah. It can't drive your four-wheel drive pickup on the sidewalk.
Okay, that makes perfect sense now.
Okay, I think that's the extent of spending money. I don't like to do, but I would keep this place looking.
That wasn't so bad, though.
That could have been worse.
It's not as bad as it normally is.
I didn't come in for $250,000.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, next on the list for money to be spent, I got a letter from Linda Hobbs, the Brown County Parks and Rec Board. And they're proposing a 50-50 cost split with the commissioners for security cameras at Deer Run Park. These cameras are to be installed by something called SecureCom, the cost of $16,000. County IT Director Laura Manette will oversee the project. Security cameras are desperately needed to help ensure the safety of citizens as they visit their county park. The Veterans Hall offices meeting rooms will benefit from this additional security as well. Blah, blah, blah.
How many cameras are there they're talking about?
I don't know the numbers.
Several.
I mean, they cover the whole property out there.
I think it's about 10.
And it takes care of the whole trail.
I actually had a conversation with that.
What's the cost on that again, Jerry?
$16,000.
They want to split 50-50 with us at a cost of 16. Our part would be 8.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't do anything for the trail. There's cameras on the trail out here. Only going to be one or two. It's like $3,000.
Yeah. The conversation I remember was, I was presented with that, and I kept asking questions. whether, when they put those cameras in, if they went down here on the first part of the trail and put more cameras in, how and where they were all going to be monitored. And with the next section of trail coming up, we're going to need cameras out there. And if the system that they was putting in was going to be able to absorb that. And some of the details I don't want to get into, but most of it sounded fine that we're going to be the ones spending like $3,800 on the first section, is my understanding. And it's got some bells and whistles that go with it.
Julia.
Hello?
Yeah, Melissa.
Oh, hi. That's Melissa. Go ahead.
Okay, so just a little heads up on what you're saying, Ron. I got a call today from the town of Nashville, and they are going to hook up those $3,800 cameras to their electricity, and they will be responsible for the electricity on those cameras if we buy them and put and have them installed. They'll take it from there. And then also, Laura, let me let you guys know that we do have enough money in security improvements left in her budget that would cover the Parks and Rec and the $3,800 for that trail.
Julie, question.
What about the new trail? Who's going to pay for the cameras on the new part of the trail? It was my understanding that the system could handle all of the cameras being monitored through one system, and that could be transferred to certain other systems that we have. And then at some point, we're going to have the trail in between the park trail out at Annandale coming to where, like, the YMCA is. That's a whole nother thing down the road. But if it was my understanding, even at that, the system should be able to handle it. My only thing is, I don't see anybody from the Parks and Rec here, is there?
I don't think so.
And before we spend $8,000 on the cameras, I just was wondering if they can afford to buy all of them. We're buying the $3,800 ones on the first trail, and now we're going to have to buy cameras on the third section, but I think you're calling it the second section because it was completed second.
Well, that number just got dropped, so we called either the DNR or the Eagle Park section, okay, since it was DNR funded.
That's just my thoughts on it, because that's coming up next, mm-hmm, and we're going to have to pay for cameras on that too. So maybe if Parks and Rec could afford the $16,000, and then we'll pay the $3,800, and then when we get the cameras for the next section, maybe we can pay for the cameras for that. Just a thought.
Well, and once they get that remote, are they capable of doing, you know, Wi-Fi, wireless? Because it hate to have to run, you know, a mile and a half of cable out to them.
I think it would be wireless.
Solar?
Something.
It'd be more than Bluetooth. But.
And so that somebody monitors that, but it's obviously recorded. So if you go down there and you've got some vandalism, then you can go back and get the tapes, or is it?
You said obviously. No, there's no obviously.
I'm just asking.
You're becoming an overthinker, but that's good. That's a question that needs to be answered.
Full-time job watching the cameras.
I would think that it stays on for so, you would think, obviously, that I'm not, the way motion, my cameras
work. Motion activated.
What?
Motion
no.
activated.
No. The way my cameras work is it's on there, okay? And at some point, it tapes over. That's a question we need answered. Because it tapes over at a certain point, and that's a good time, so if something happens, then they should be able to go in and pull it up and look at it, okay, and say, we got an issue, yeah, we can identify this. And like I said, some of this I'm not ready to talk about in public, but yes, it sounds like a really good deal. But if we got to buy the cameras for the other section fixing to come online, then it started to sound more reasonable, like if they could pay the $16,000, then we'll pay the $38,000 and the other. That's just my thought.
Have them come next.
Pardon me?
Have them come next meeting, see if they can.
That sounds feasible, and that'd give them time to ask their board or ask them what we're going to do in the next section.
There you go.
So are you making a motion to table that, sir?
I am.
Okay.
I second it.
All in favor, raise your right hand and say aye.
Aye.
I keep hearing rumors that Parks and Rec have more money than they let on.
Really?
I don't know. Looked at their financials. I don't know anything about it. It's just a rumor I heard.
They're a good bunch of people. They'll just let us know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, everybody, you know, wants to protect their own part of the system, you know. I understand that, you know. And so it's a little bit of a competitive nature, which is good. Okay. Now, anything else? I don't think I have anything else. Okay.
You there, Mike?
Yep.
How you doing, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. There's nothing to add. That's what you're asking.
Thank you, sir.
Did we do anything stupid today?
Don't ask that question. Never ask that question.
Or anything illegal.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Motion?
Second.
Second. All in favor, raise your right hand. Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you all for coming today. We appreciate your input. And all of you those who joined us on the Zoom.